amos, in other words, within 6 feet of where prayers have been recited. Okay. Rashi says it's achat tefillah, which means that he's already finished saying the prayer, and you know, then that's it. But I don't have to tell you, we're not talking about a shul at this particular point. What are we talking about? So obviously we're talking about some open area where they made an ad hoc gathering or something like that. I don't know if it's ever... To me it's happened, you know, that I take a look, for example, that it's getting late and mincha time is almost over. Let's say I've been on the road or whatever it may be. So I stop and I say, mincha, okay? Even though I'm not in the shul at that particular point, nor am I home at that particular point. So this is the kind of a situation, as we'll see from the Gemara, that this is probably what they have in mind. That, you know, people said a prayer, they davened, and then it was not within the walls of a shul, but it was outside somewhere, okay? And in those days, apparently, you know, if you had to go, so you had to find the most convenient spot. Not every place was graced with a place, like you say, with a public toilet or a private toilet, whatever it may be. And of course, we have that problem today, too.
Rest stop,
right. So,
stop by the side of the road.
Right, just stop by the side of the road, okay? You go behind the bushes and you do what you have to do, okay? So, at any rate, if you daven, then you could then urinate within Dalet Amos of it. So Amar Rav Yossi, Maikam Ashpolon, he says, what are you telling me? He says, Tanina, we learned, Rav Yehuda Omer, he says, Maichan Oysa L'shem Chotzer, he says, didn't we learn that, this was the last opinion in the Mishnah, if you remember, but Rav Yehuda says that they could sell the shul and they could sell it for a Chotzer, in other words, for an open space, okay? And the person who buys the property can do with it whatever it is that he wants. So that, therefore, if the sanctity is gone from the shul, you understand? So you can turn it into whatever you want. And if he wants to set up a urinal over there, okay. Which was quite contrary to what we learned at the Chachamim, I mean, because they did not agree with Rabbi Yehuda in this case. They said you cannot turn it into what? Into Beis Hamayim, okay? So we can see there are different points of view about the propriety of something like this. So, Vafila Rabbanan, Loka Amre, Ela Beis HaKnesset Kaviyah Kedushne. He says, even the rabbis, when they said you cannot sell it if you know that it's going to be used as we said before, Beis Hamayim as a place, you know, as a urinal. This is only when we're talking about a shul where the holiness, the sanctity has been set. We all know that this is a holy place. But if you simply take an area where the holiness was never established as being a holy place, then in that particular case that has no holiness, and therefore if you have to do it, you can do it. Okay. So to the Tana come in Rav Nachman. So a certain Tana in this particular case means somebody who had memorized text from his rabbis, and so he would quote it in the presence of the yeshiva where they were studying. So he said it in the presence of Rav Nachman. He said, "Hamispalel marchik dalet amos umashdim." Person can daven, and then he has to go 4 amos, in other words, 6 feet away from where he is daven, umashdim, and he can pass his water. The hamashdim, and on the other hand, the person who is urinating, marchik dalet amos, he has to move away. 4 amos, as I said, at least 6 feet away, and Mispala, and then he can daven. Of course, what I don't see over here is, after all, that it's nice to wash your hands before. That's not mentioned over here. But it's assumed, I mean, that if you use the facilities, that in that particular case, you must wash your hands. As a matter of fact, in general, it's a proper procedure to wash your hands prior to davening. And there's many a shul where, particularly shtibul or something like that, when you come in, you'll find that there's a sink over there in which you can wash your hands before you go into davening. So, Amalei, so he said to him, Bishlemor ha-mashtin machidav al-amayis mispalel. Okay, where the last statement that you made, that a person who urinates can then distance himself Davad Amos and then Davin over there, he says, Tanina, this we already have learned previously. It's Gemara in Brochas, which says, Kama Yarchik Mehen Minatsoa. How far does a person have to remove himself from anything which is like urine or garbage or something like that, or even from excrement? So he has to remove himself Dalet Amos. You have to be at least 6 feet away from it, right? And then in that particular case, what? Then you can say your prayers. But you have to be a distance away from anything like this. Ela hamispalel, marchik Dalet Amos amashtin lomeli, says, but you say that if a person davens and then he urinates, what do I need it for? Obviously, if you've already finished davening, then you can do whatever you have to do, right? So he says, Hochi, he says, if that's the case, Kitashtinhu Lukule Shvili Dahada, you know, he says, I can show to you that all the streets in the Harda is a very Jewish city, where Shmuel lived, and then, there was a very famous yeshiva that continued for generations over there. I could show you that in this particular town, every street is a shul, in the sense that it's not a building, but people, when they sit, they stop and they pray over there. Every Jew is so concerned with davening that he stops and he prays over there. Otherwise, it should happen in America. But that being the case, what do we have to say about it? We still have to say that, So to me, Yasha. So he says, okay, then what you should do is to wait, first of all, before he does anything. So, what does it mean? In other words, when it says Davad Amos, it's not just proximity, but it's also that you should wait a little while, let's say the amount of time that it would take to walk that distance. So it says, Bishnabo Mashtin Yeshekide Hiloch Davad Amos. This we can understand. That if a person is urinating, then in that particular case, he should wait at least the time that it takes to walk away Dalet Amos, but wait before what? Before davening. This is what he says. So why does he have to wait before he says? Well, he says, Mishum Nitzotzes, because sometimes when people urinate, there's still something that keeps dribbling out. So if you wait, you know that, you finally finished with that, and then you can be. Now look, they're talking about human beings,
6 feet.
Well, all right. If you want to say that the Nama is 24 inches, according to some, okay, so that would already be 12 feet. Okay.
But it just shows how interested they were that of Kedusha and
the sanctity.
Right.
That even the smallest of a detail like this,
right,
that they're fretting over it.
No, yeah, absolutely. No question about it.
The normal things of life bothered them.
Right.
So, is the whole purpose that we're doing this because they say, well, now if you have a Beit Knesset, you could never have a urinal because you could never be with,
you should never turn it into a urinal.
Yeah, you could never be without, you know,
I have to go back again to what I said a couple of weeks ago, that the shul in those days was not necessarily the kind of shul that we see over here,
right.
Okay? That very often it was an open, unroofed place, you know, the people would get in over there and they would daven over there, and there was a separation for men, for women, and so on and so forth. But not necessarily with a roof over it. This is what it was, okay? So obviously they had no toilet facilities for the shul in those days, okay? Today, when we build a shul, we better have toilet facilities.
And they better be 6 feet from the prayer section.
Well, it would help from the point of view of any odors that come from the bathroom. But the point is that if, you know, the bathroom is an enclosed area and it's apart, you know, from the shul itself, then in that case, it would be okay. I've seen Shtiblich, for example.
I was thinking of the
right.
Shtiblich.
Yeah, exactly. Shtiblich, you know, after all, Shtiblich is a small place and so on.
I don't think they had in the old days. I don't think they had toilet facilities in Shtiblich.
Well, that's a question. That's a question.
I was a little girl, but they were just open, a big store. It was just a storefront.
Right, but usually they would try to have some place because obviously people are human beings and there are times that they have to use facilities, right?
Thomas.
Yeah.
Did they have outhouses?
There were outhouses, yes, that you did have. And usually they were at a distance from a house or something like that. There's no question about that. Yeah, they did happen. But not everybody was privileged to have an outhouse or to have the facility handy. So in that case, then they did what they could do.
In
right?
biblical times, they had to go outside the camp. Did they not?
This is correct.
Yeah.
You're right. Because the camp had Kedusha. Okay? God's presence was there. Because it said to Hashem, the camp is Hadech Bekirav Machadecha. That the Lord your God is there present in the midst of your camp, and it says, "For your machanecho kadosh," and therefore your camp should be holy. And so, therefore, they say that if a person has to, has to move his bowels, so he is supposed to have a spade among his possessions, so that he can go and dig a hole in the ground, do what he has to do, and then he has to cover it over.
Just for
wartime
circumstances or just in general?
Well, in general, right. That, you have to have regard, and don't simply leave excrement around or something like that. But that's a problem, right? Yeah. Okay, so, all right. So anyway, you learned that, if you finish, if you urinate, it isn't just that you have to remove yourself, dalet amos, but you have to wait, yishek kedeil, right? You have to wait that amount of time because of the possibility that you have not really gotten rid of all the urine and that you might still be dribbling a little bit. And you should be free of the dribbling when you have to daven. Okay. Elimus Padel Yeshek and Ahilat al Tamas, lovely, but in the case when a person davens, and then he has to wait, Dalet Amos, why does he need that? So Rav Ashi said, Shekol Dalet Amos, Tridlosi Sedura Bethiv, Rechushi Machshinisiv Sotayil. He says that when a person finishes davening, and he goes, Dalet Amos, but his thoughts are still upon prayer. As he says, literally, Tfilos is dur b'fiv, he's still thinking about the davening that he said. And also his lips, he says, are also repeating prayers or whatever it may be, holy psukim and things like that. So that, therefore, that being the case, this is why he has to go away to another area before he can urinate over there, or whatever it may be. Okay. We'll do a little bit. You know, I said I would stop about 8:30. All right, we'll do just a little bit more. We start over here now with a group of stories about to what do you attribute a long life. Okay? Shalu Talmidov is Rabbi Zakkai. The students of Rabbi Zakkai asked him the following question. They said, Bameh Erachta Yomim. What, in other words, through what merit have you had such a long life? So Amar Lahem, so he said to them, I'll tell you some of the things that I practice. He says, Mi yomai lo ishtanti maim sotad lama shal tefila. He says, as long as I've been alive, I have never urinated within 4 amos of prayer. That's one thing. Okay? Velo kinisi shem l'chaverai. Nor have I ever called somebody by a nickname. Now, of course, by a nickname, what we have to assume is that, you know, we call him Shorty or Fatso or something like that. You understand? Right. Pejorative one. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So I've never called anybody by any derogatory nickname. And he says, "V'lo bitalti kiddush hayom," nor have I ever failed to recite the kiddush for, you know, for Friday night, for yontif. And it's understood over here in this case, he means the kiddush over wine. How do we know that? Because what follows now? He says, "Imus keno hayisoli." I had a mother who became very old, and pamachas. You know what happened once? Mochro kippah shebarosho. Women would wear a kippah, okay? Not a yarmulke, but they wore, you know, a cap covering their head, okay? My mother sold the cap that she wore over her head, the hevioli kiddush hayom, and with it she bought me wine so I could recite kiddush. In other words, it was a great sacrifice on her part, because obviously they were poor, and it was very difficult for him to buy wine, and so she sacrificed this special kerchief or whatever it is that she had on her head in order to be able to purchase wine so that he could recite Kiddush. Tana, so then we learned that Gishemesa, when his mother died, she left him 300 barrels of wine. In other words, as a result of her sacrifice, she was blessed with the fact that eventually their you know, their economic circumstances changed for the better, and she was able to bequeath to him 300 barrels of wine. And then it says, Kishemes who, and when he died, so he left 3,000 barrels of wine for his children. So this is the case of Zakkai, Rav Zakkai. Now he's
had a long time.
Yeah.
He never called people names.
Right. He always had regard for the honor of another person, but never called them by any name which was right, which was pejorative. And also he made sure that he would always, it's not that he would drink a lot of wine, but he always wanted to make sure that this mitzvah of making kiddush over wine, he would be able to fulfill it. And even under the most difficult circumstances, he never in his life missed doing it. Yeah.
Also sounds like he honored his mother.
Oh yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, she honored him because she was the one. I mean, he didn't ask her to do it. She voluntarily did it. And I don't have to tell you, you know. Right, yeah. Rav Huna, Hava Asa Risa Vekai Kameda Rav. Now the story is told about Rav Huna. In his particular case, he made a belt out of, Rashi says, gemi. Gemi means that he did not have a belt made out of leather, or a belt which is made out of you know, a cloth of some kind, but he came before Rabbi, he came before Rav, and he was wearing a belt which apparently was made out of reeds or something like that, okay? Because Gemi is related to the word Gomet that we have, you know, we read in the story about Moshe Rabbeinu, that what did his mother do? She made a little basket made out of the bulrushes and so on, yeah. So this is, he weaved it together and he made a belt. So, Omale, so Rav said to him, my hai, what's this episode? So Omale, so he said to him, Bohavali Kiddusha, did not have money in order to make Kiddush, Mashkante Lehem Yone, and as a result, I pawned my pledge, or pawned, whatever you want to say, my belt that I had. It's really my girdle, all right. But Saibe Kiddush, and with it, I was able to get wine for Kiddush. So Amalei, so Rav said to him, Yehei Ravok, may it be God's will. You know, it's like Yehei Ratzon, it's the same thing. But in Aramaic, it's Yehei Ravok. You know, we say in Be'ad no Rochets, right? Yehei Ravok, Kodomo, Tzivtach Libi V'Raiso, right? May it be thy will, you know, that you may open my heart unto thy Torah, and so on and so forth, right? So that's what Yehei Ravok means. And he said, Yehei Ravah, may it be God's will, the Sito Mishirai, that you may one day be covered with silk. So, Ki Ichlal, Rabah Bereda Rav Huna, when Rabah, the son of Rav Huna, got married, okay, so in that particular case, Inish Gutzahava, so Rav Huna happened to be a short person. He was a shorty, right? Kona Apurya, and he was lying in bed. So Asyon Bansei V'chaloseish, and so his daughters and his daughters-in-law came. Shalchon V'shadyon Minayhu Alai Adi Yutu Mishirai. You know what they did? They took off the silk outer garments that they were wearing, and they covered him with the silk. To Mishirai. Shoma Rav, so when Rav heard the story, the Ikpid, he became angry. He said, Omar, my Tamala Matali, how come you never told me when Kibarachticha, when I blessed you, that you should say, V'chein Lamar, which means, and may you also have the same thing. It's become a proverbial expression, V'chein Lamar, or Kain Lamar. So, where somebody gives you a brothel, you say the Cain Lamar. May you also have it. So, this is the source over here.
Cain Lamar,
right. May my master also have it, okay. Of course, today, you know, Mar is
rare. Mar is the
master. Today, they use it for mister, and so on, right.
Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, also
so, in other words, you too, right.
Yeah.
How come when. You know, I gave you a bracha, so why don't you say you also should have the same bracha?
Right.
Yeah, some people could say Chayn Lamar or something like that. Yeah, correct. I will go down to the bottom of the page, and then we'll call it a night. Shalom Talmidim is Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. So the students of Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua asked him, Bameh Erachta Yomim, what is the secret for your long life, right? What is the schus? What merit did you have? So Omar Lehem, he told them the following. He says, Mi Yomai, Lord Sisa Kapanri Eleves Haknesses. I never used a shul as a shortcut to get from one place to another. In other words, I always treated a shul with respect. Okay? But no Pasati al Rashi Am Kodosh. It's a very important concept over here. Those days, the Talmidim would sit on the ground, right? And the teacher would sit on a bench or something like that, okay? So he says, when I would come into the base medrash, I would never come in such a way that it seems that I'm stepping over the heads of them. In other words, I want them to have all the respect in the world for themselves, and I don't want them to feel, you know, that I'm overlording over them by stepping. So in other words, he arranged somehow or other to, you know, to speak to them without having to do this. Rosh Yom Kodesh. And he says, you know, you are a holy people, right? And then he says, well, Nasasi Kapai Velo Bracha. He says, I am a Kohen, yet never in my life did I ever give the priestly benediction, go up to Duchen, without washing. Okay? So, of course, the answer is actually that the Kohen must wash his hands before he goes. So we would say, so what's the Rebusa? So what's so wonderful about that? Sorry. So the answer is because I wanted to feel that when I'm blessing them, I'm truly doing it with all my heart. This is what he means. Okay, we'll stop at this point. One line from the bottom, and we'll continue the Yitzhak next week. Okay, tonight is the 8th of January in the year 2003. We are now in the very last line in Megillah Chav Zayin Amud Beis, and we continue in the series that we started last week where rabbis were asked how did they what chus did they have, what merit did they have that they were able to live a long life. Obviously not every rabbi was so privileged, but you know, people who wanted to know what way of life to follow in order to have arichas yomim, you know, to have length of days, what was the virtue that they had. So now we come to the last line over there, and it says Shalu Talmidov is Rabbi Preda. This time they asked Rabbi Preda, Bameher Achta Yomim, what did you do in order to deserve such a long life? So Amar Lehem, so this is what he said. He said, first of all, Mi Yomai Lo Kidmani Odom Neves HaMedresh. Never, as long as I live, has anybody gotten into the base, has anybody come to the base of Medrash in order to learn earlier than I. In other words, I was always the first to come in order to sit down and to learn.
How long did he live?
The age is not given. Okay. But obviously, he must have impressed people with his length of days, okay? All right. And we continue now in Chav Ches Omen Aleph. He says, not only that, but v'lo birachti lifnei kohen, which means that when it came time, when I was with a group of people, and it was time to bench, and if there was a kohen who was there, and of course, according to the law, the kohen should get, you know, first rights in order to bench, so he says, v'lo birachti lifnei kohen. I never led the benching when a Kohen was present over there. In other words, I always showed respect to the Kohen. We'll see that this is going to be a little challenge a little bit later, in a few moments, but at any rate, this is what he felt, you know, contributed. This is part of the merit which enabled him to attain a long life. And then he says, V'lo achalti mibehemosh lo humu matniseha. He says, never did I eat any animal, it says, from which the various matanos, in other words, the gifts that have to be given from the animal, had not been taken. This is based upon the fact that, for example, we know that certain things are prohibited to us, of course, the Torah says we're not allowed to have it. But chelev, dom, that's no question about it. Okay, by the way, chelev is different type of a fat as compared to shuman, which is the ordinary fat. When you eat a piece of corned beef and it has fat on it, that's shuman, that's not chelev, okay?
I wouldn't know, it's been so long.
It's what used to give you the taste. I still remember, you know, the taste of hot corned beef with a little fat on it. I God ate it.
That's your memory now.
You go to Portland Lock Fest often enough, you can have a. There's plenty of places where you can get that.
Yeah, but.
They slice on the machine. Then they put it in the microwave.
Right.
Not the same.
Well, I still have the taste of one time that I went, what is it, Essex on Coney.
Coney, yeah.
Did I have a sandwich over there?
Mm.
Okay. It's an experience that has never been duplicated.
You can't get in there without you. You can't get in there without
you.
Your cop is hanging
out. If we asked you to what you attribute your length of days, you'd say...
I would say to eating a corned beef sandwich once.
Is this Halo Fulco wax?
We call, for example, in Yiddish,
yeah.
You know, they speak about a candle.
Yeah.
That and so on. In reality, it's not really chelev. Although, once upon a time, back in ancient times, chelev was used, you know, they would boil it and they would make camels out of it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. But today.
Is it tallow and the animal?
Yeah, tallow, correct.
Yeah.
Right.
So, what kind of
Except that tallow could also be specifically from the alya, from the tail of a sheep, which is very fat. Yeah. But regardless, the point is, by the way, that's also prohibited to a Jew.
Yeah, right.
But what I started to say about the Yiddish, you know, today all candles are made out of paraffin. In other words, it's a petroleum product. Okay, they don't make it anymore out of tallow. So, but, you know, the expression still remains. In Yiddish, they still, you know... you know, right, that's what we say. In other words, you spill out some of the, you know, the drops of it so that the light will burn more brightly. Because I know you've all had the experience that when you bend schlicht and, you know, the light, as it gets down towards the bottom, very often it sort of gets drowned out by the paraffin over there. All right. So he says, yeah. All right, so I started to say that chelev and dom stands to reason we're not allowed to have because the Torah specifically prohibits it. But the Torah also says that with an animal, you have to give to the kohen, hazroa, the halchayai, the hakeva. The zroa is the right foreleg that was given to him. The halchayai, these are the cheeks, right? The cheeks of the animal, okay. Call it the jaw, so it's like the jaw, okay. The hakeva, that's the stomach, okay. So these things were given as a gift to the Kohen, okay. So he said, I've never eaten meat without making sure that these parts have already been taken out. Because, why? Because otherwise he would treat it, he says, that, you know, as if it were a prohibited food. Okay, he was very scrupulous about that. Okay. So,
it wasn't
even after the
base
of Mikdash was destroyed?
Even
after the base of Mikdash was destroyed?
You would think that the whole thing is banished. I mean, we don't observe that.
Uh-huh.
But this was a chumrah that he took upon himself. This we have to understand. I mean, I don't have to tell you that even today people take certain chumras upon themselves,
right,
to the extent, you know, that sometimes, in very orthodox circles, the question is, what is the chumra of the week? The chumra of the week. Right? What aren't we allowed to do this week? Well, listen, what are we going to say? I mean, some people are machmirim, they're very, you know, very stringent in their interpretation. Others are the killing, you know. They take an easier interpretation. Okay? And people can take chumras upon themselves even though it's not required. You can say to a certain extent that this whole business of glut meat, is a chumra. Because according to the Shulchan Aruch, according to what Rabbi Yosef Karo is concerned, but it's according to what the Ramot says. In other words, the practice of Ashkenazic Jewry is that if you can remove, for example, an adhesion on the lung, and there's no perforation over there, naturally it has to be tested, but there's no perforation, then the animal is kosher. Okay? But the people who claim that they're eating only glut, they say any adhesion on the lung automatically disqualifies that as far as they're concerned. What is worse is that they'll declare, you know, that the other is trafe when it's not trafe. You see, this is a different problem that we have to face. And then, of course, the whole thing, I mean, with glut kosher chicken and...
yeah, what's glut kosher about chicken?
Nothing.
That's already, you know, going...
That was a sense.
Right, yeah. All right.
The name is your business.
Yeah. At any rate, so this is what Rav Prater said, you know, as he observed these things so scrupulously, and this is what contributed to his long life. The Yomar of Yitzchak, and of course the last statement finds a support in a statement that we find elsewhere. That the Rav Yitzchak said, "Kol ho'echol mi'behemo shlo huba matisecho, kiyulo echol tivolim." Okay, that if a person eats from an animal where the various matonas, in other words, what I mentioned, you know, the foreleg and so on, has not been removed, it's as if he was eating tevel. Tevel is that if you have fruits, vegetables, okay, that you have not removed that portion. You know, you haven't taken truma out of it or something like that. That's what I mean. Truma is maestros and so on, so it's tevel. And a good person is not supposed to eat tevel, okay? This is why, for example, you know, fruits, vegetables that grow in Eretz Yisrael are subject to this rule that they have to have tevel, maestros, and so on, you know. That they have to have... these things are called truma, maestros, and so on, okay? And you'll find in from neighborhoods that they'll have specifically a statement in the window of the shop telling you, you know, that trumas and maestros were taken on this and this particular day, and whatever they're selling you is free of them.
Okay? What they do with the animal now in Israel, for instance, do they separate the jaw and the four legs?
No.
They eat it?
No, because take a look what it says, the next two words.
Okay.
And it says,
yes,
the less hilchaso kaposei. The halacha does not follow his opinion. Okay. So in other words, this is, as we say, it's an extra chumrah that he took upon himself,
yeah.
But it's not what is followed today. We have a different problem, of course, today, you know, namely with the hindquarters. What do you do? Okay. In America, it's a very simple business. There's so many goyim around over here that all you have to do is to take, you know, the high quarter of fame and you sell it at the goyish trade.
There's a big
okay.
business with armor. I had read one time that the companies, the kosher companies, the armor and meat packing companies buy up all of this.
Yeah, they do. I mean, I've been in slaughterhouses, and of course,
any good price.
Yeah. To a certain extent, also, some of the kosher slaughterhouses today happen to be owned by big non-kosher firms as
makes
well.
No difference.
Right. So
they do trade with Israel.
Pardon me?
They trade with
Israel. In Israel, they try to trade with, right. Now, there are people who are still skilled, you know, in trading so that it may be possible to have high quality.
You speak such a mess.
Yeah, yeah,
you
of course.
I mean, it messes up.
Right. Right.
Can I ask a simple question? My daughter asked me this. I always like to be intelligent and answer her questions.
Okay.
Where is tenderloin taken from? That
from the rear.
But is it close to the ribs or is it
no?
Way in
no,
the rear?
It's in the rear.
It's the hind quarter, right? That's why we're not allowed to.
You know, you got from here down.
Yeah.
You got the.
You have the sciatic nerve, right? What we call the gid hadasha.
You got the porterhouse.
Yeah.
I used to cut it my So you got the. You know what a porterhouse steak looks like? It's like a T-bone. And you got a big part and a small part. The small part is the tendon. The big part is what they use. They call the syrup. It's one of the syrups.
Okay.
Okay. You never know
with that
when
vein
that
goes
yeah, right.
To get that vein out.
Yeah, it's very complicated.
You know, do a job on it. So, you know, in Israel it may be worth it. Here,
yeah.
All they have left would be hamburger.
The butchers didn't learn how to do that. My uncle from Europe used to say that all the butchers knew how to take out those veins.
In Europe, it was a necessity because a butcher would buy an animal, bring it to the sheikh and have it slaughtered, and then, you know, cut up the various pieces. So if he had to, you know, he tried to get whatever he could out of the animal itself, he can't take it and throw it away. Yeah. It's different from the wholesale meat industry that we have here today.
Even in Poland, there were just a few select mashkirim who could do it, not too many.
Yeah, the technical term for that is a menakir. Menakir.
What's menakir?
Menakir means actually to pick out, to take out something. So this is the term. They had menakir.
Germany didn't do it. They sold it to
Germany already, you know.
Sold it to
they were
as
born
a matter of fact, a kosher butcher and a Trefe butcher were always children. Bought it together.
You mean they bought the animal together?
Yeah.
Okay.
But when the animal was Trefe, then there was a big problem. Then the kosher butcher got it for a little nothing.
Right. Okay. Let's continue right now, so we see that the halacha doesn't follow this particular opinion. All right, and then he says, "Yes, v'loy berachtim of dekoyin." Remember, he said that. He said that I never led the benching in the presence of a kohen. So it says the neimra. Now the Gemara challenges this. It says, "You mean to tell me the Baal Yusuhi that this is a terrific thing?" It's a Bible, as we would say. But the home of Rabbi Yochanan, didn't Rabbi Yochanan say that called Talmid Chochem Shemavorek Lefona Vafilo Kain Godol Am Haoretz? Also Talmid Chochem Chayav Misa. Okay, he says. Rabbi Yochanan said as follows. He says, when you have a Talmid Chochem and a Kohen leads the benching in his presence, even if he were the Kohen Gadol, but the Kohen is an Am Haaretz. That's, of course, the proviso. The Kohen is an Am Haaretz. Then in that particular case, this Talmid Chacham deserves death. Of course, I don't have to tell you, he doesn't deserve death, but what it means is it's a very strong statement to say that he's absolutely wrong in what he's doing. Because the Talmud Chacham should take precedence over a Kohen who is not a Talmud Chacham.
Oh.
That's what he's trying to say. Okay.
Is this still an argument?
This is what Rabbi Yochanan
had to say.
According to Rabbi Yochanan. Of course. We know. I mean, it's not only in Brachas, but they have it in general. For example, in Gittin, it says, "B'nei Darchei Shalom." For the sake of peace in the world, a Kohen gets the first Aliyah, right? The lady gets the next one, and then come the Israel, and so on and so forth, okay? And as I say, it's in order to preserve peace in the world, is what it says, okay?
We discussed the question here about Kohen, and even if they're not observant, that they are he called up.
Yes, right, we still give the first Aliyah, even under those circumstances, correct. Your question, Sylvia, is right. I mean, the fact is that we encourage all the Kahanim over here to go and fulfill the mitzvah because, strictly speaking, a Kohen who has not shed blood has the requirement of going up to Duchen. There is also, however, another requirement which says that the Kohen should be somebody who the people are happy with. In other words, if they feel that he's chves an oiswar for something like that, then in that particular case, he should not go. I mean, because people will object to it, okay? They feel that they're not getting a bracha from, a person who personally, was one of them. So this is the reason why many of the kahanim over here who write the shul, let's say, they felt funny about going, but they were encouraged to go up to Duchen because, let's face it, how many kahanim do we have? Don't have that many. I've been in shuls where you can see the people is just crowded with God and the Rosh Hashanah Shabbos,
How many Kohanim come to shuls? That should be
Correct. Okay. All right. Well, Baruch Hashem, from time to time we have Kahanim over here who actually Shomer Shabbos too. So, we do. All right. So, at any rate, the feeling over here is that if the Kohen is an Am Haaretz, then the Talmud Chacham, who declined to lead the benching in favor of the Kohen, the Am Haaretz, is doing something which is wrong. He should really do it. Shinemar, and they find the Pasuk in order to justify this. What is the Pasuk? It says, Kol Mitzanai Ohavu Mavis. All those who hate me, they love death. It's a Pasuk of Mishnah, okay. So, at any rate, how is it interpreted? It's interpreted, Al Tikre Mitzanai Ila Masdiai. Do not interpret it as my enemies, but those who cause me to become hated. No, who are we talking about? So Rashi explains that here we're talking about the main theme of Proverbs is the glorification of Chochmah, of wisdom, which of course is identified with Torah. So in other words, if you hate Torah as exemplified by the fact that you're an Am Haaretz, right? Then in that particular case, if the Talmud Chacham does not lead the benching, what you're saying is that the Am Haaretz is more important in this particular case, and it's like degrading the Torah. Okay. The truth of the matter is, however, that nevertheless, if we can, we'd like to show honor to a Kohen, because Mipnei Darchei Sholem, as I said to you before, and this is what the Gemara says, not over here, but it says so in the Gittin. Okay? So, at any rate, they give an explanation. It says, Ki ko amar ihu vishovin. So, Rabbi Freda is saying, you know, that he didn't bench. He didn't leave the benching if there was a Kohen, even though the Kohen was, it says that's not really what the case was. The case was that the Kohen himself also was a scoff. So in that particular case, he is obligated to show honor to the Kohen. Okay. All right. Yes. Okay. So now we come to another one. Shalu Talmido es Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana. The Talmidim of Rabbi Nechunya ben Kodkora asked him same question. Right? What merit do you have in that you have length of days, that you lived a long life? So Amalehem, he said to them, Miyomai lo niskabarati bekolon chavirai. Says, never, as long as I live, have I honored myself at the shame of others. As we know, I mean, there are people, you know, that they always want to put down somebody else in order to feel more important. So he says, never in my life did I ever do that. I always had respect for other people, and I never tried to put them down. And he said, never, when I went to bed, did the curse of any other person accompany me. We'll have that in a couple of lines down where they explain it in greater detail. We'll see what he says.
I
never went to bed, right, with the curse of my, of another person, okay?
Somebody cursed him.
Yeah. Somebody else cursed him. Well, as I say, we'll come to it in just a few moments, okay? Because right now he's saying these three things, and then they're going to analyze them. Right. And then he says, the third thing is, Vatram mimamoni hoyisi. Also, I was always liberal with my money. I was never stingy. I always gave freely, liberally, okay? Now, they explain a little bit. Bonus kabarati bekolon chavira, right? I never honored myself by the disgrace brought to somebody else. It says, for example, the case of Rav Huna, Dore Morar Kospe. Rav Huna was carrying a spade upon his shoulders. In other words, he had to go out into the fields, right, and to do work. So we can imagine, you know, that Rav Huna was probably a little bit on in years at this particular point in his life, right? And there was a schlepping a spade, which could be quite heavy. So also Rav Huna bar Chanilai, came, because Dore Mine, and he schlepped it from him, he took it from him, in order, you know, that he wanted to carry it. Obviously, why was he doing it? He wanted to make it, you know, as a sign of respect, and make it easy for Rav Huna, right? So Amalei, so Rav Huna said to him, it says, Irigilas the Doris b'masayach Dori. It says, if in your masa over here means town, okay, if in your own town where you live you are accustomed to schlepping the spade, then in that case, all right. But the Elo, but if not, then you know what? Is Yakuri Anab Zilusididok Lo Nichali. It says, I don't want to get honor by putting you down. This is not pleasant to me. Okay? In other words, I don't want to have to take advantage of you in order to show that I'm superior to you or something like that. Also, Abitasi Kilulas Abirai, right? That was the second statement that he made, that when I went to bed, the curse of my companions never accompanied me. Kihoda Mazutra. We have a case of Mazutra. Kihava Solik of Furiye, when he would go to bed, Omar Shorile the Choman Ditzarun, okay? I forgive anybody who has caused me any pain, who has insulted me, caused me any pain. So in other words, I forgive freely any person. This is why he says, the curse that another person put upon me, I never, you know, I felt I want to forgive that person and forget about it and so on, so that, you know, I realized that whatever that particular person said was said not right, or was, you know, unfairly, whatever it may be, but nevertheless, I forgive that person, okay? I don't want to go to bed angry with somebody, feeling that, you know, I have to get vengeance or something like that.
He wipes the plate clean each night.
Right, right, okay?
That's a good
advice.
Habit, yeah.
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 Maybe
that's
why he'll help you live too long.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
very well.
Very
right.
Good.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the third statement that he said is, Vatran the Mamoni Hoyisi, right? And I was living with my money. The MMR, as a scholar said, Eov Vatran Mamoni Hava. Job was liberal with his money. In what way? Shehoya Mania Pruto the Chenvol Mamoni. That whenever he would buy something, he would make sure that he would always give a little bit extra to the storekeeper. Well, in America, I don't know how it works. We are used to a fixed price, right?
Or a
says
bargain.
That this is it.
Bargain, yeah.
Bargain, whatever it may be, right. Yeah. I remember when I studied in France, I told you that there were two types of stores. One of them was where you could try to bargain with the person. The other one would say prix fixe, which means, you know, the price is fixed. There's no bargaining over there. Okay. So I can imagine then that the case which has just been mentioned over there, you know, he says, look, you know, I'd like $50 for it, let's say. And you say, that's not the price, I'm only giving you 40, and so they go up, and they say 45, okay? So he gives them not 45, but gives them 46 or 47 to show that. Okay, whatever.
Well, it shows a sense of goodwill.
Right, there's no question about that. It's interesting, I read in the paper yesterday that this community market is going out of business.
Who is it?
The community market. And,
somebody mentioned it.
It was in the paper yesterday.
Every year.
So he says he can't compete because, with supermarkets, this is the people are running over there. They're not running to, even though he provides service, he delivers and stuff like that. Because people don't appreciate
the older it. People right. getting tired of the supermarket. They can't walk around in there.
Right.
They can't do it.
Yeah,
but there are
right.
not many little places anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have any more independent drugstores, pharmacies.
Very difficult these days, right.
Shoppers
is one, Spring Street, about it over here in Springfield.
At the hospital, that's the hospital.
Campus, right.
That's it.
Yeah.
There used to be from Lower Belmont Avenue up to the old Kadima, there were about six of them.
There's
an article with Ronnie Schwartz in it.
That was today's paper, right?
Same thing about services and word taking.
Well, it's the same thing in every business.
Yeah, the kosher box is the same thing. We used to maintain, kosher butchers in town.
Just 12 kosher butchers in Springfield.
Right.
We began to feel it in the printing. Printers were very hard hit.
Well, they were hit by the computer people.
No, we had computers too, but it was the larger companies.
One company buys, a large company buys out the smaller company, whatever business the smaller company gives to somebody else is gone. The large company dictates where it goes.
Yeah.
Not a professionals lost their positions by that. Insurance people, lawyers, and accountants, and whatnot.
Yeah, I remember Barnes & Noble back from my student days at City College. I mean, that's where you ran if you wanted to get a secondhand textbook cheap. Barnes & Noble in New York.
Now everything you pay this price there.
They came up in the world and serving you coffee and et cetera.
Textbook is something else again. Years ago, a textbook lasted for 8-10 years. Today, every 2 years, the same company puts out a revised textbook.
Yeah.
This is how you create a market for new books.
Oh, yeah, no question. As far
that's
as textbooks.
For the past 15-20 years, that's been the name of the game.
And the price has gone up, too.
We'll tell you all about it.
You went to school before the paperback revolution.
Right.
Yeah, but even the paperback
revolution was about 20-25 years ago.
Yeah, but some paperbacks used to be a quarter. Today, you're paying $4-$5 at least. Not more.
Each course you bought one book.
Okay. Anyway, we have a couple of more to find out how we can attain long life. So Rabbi Akiva is Rabbi Nechunya HaGadol. Okay, so Rabbi Akiva asked Rabbi Nechunya HaGadol, the great Rabbi Nechunya, and he says, Baneh Rachta Yomim, right? Tell me, what is the secret of your life that you have attained, such a long life? So also gavoze v'kor mochule. So the servants of Rabbi Nechunya, they thought that that Rabbi Akiva was a pest. He was bothering their rebbe, and so they started to beat him. So what did Rabbi Akiva do? He went out and climbed up. And Yosef Aresha the Dikla, they sat on top of a palm tree. Omalei. And then he said to Rabbi Nechunya ben Akod, he said, Rabbi, Im ne'emar keves, loma ne'emar echod. The Torah says, Es hakeves echot haaseh v'boker, right? V'es hakeves hasheni taaseh bein ha'boim. Okay. But nevertheless, es hakeves echot taaseh, actually it says, es hakeves echot haaseh v'boker. Okay. One, so in the context we can understand, it's written what? That one sheep is to be slaughtered in the morning as the burnt offering. V'es hakeves hasheni, and the second one is in the afternoon, right? Okay. But he says, why does it say keves echod, one? When the word keves by itself would simply mean imply one, you understand? Okay. If I would say, for example, Yesh Li Sefer, okay?
You don't need
I have a book. I don't have to say, I have Sefer Echa. It's not important. Unless, I mean, you're trying to make a point, a contrast or something. Yeah.
But if you say
Echa,
doesn't it almost mean there's going to be a Sheni?
No.
One, then
we understand.
Is
it Ron or is it
Sefer?
Yeah, right. The point is, of course, obviously, you know, that he's asking him a question in order to, how do you interpret this? I mean, after all, the Torah normally doesn't like to go in for unnecessary verbiage. You understand? This is why we say, you know, when we start in to give a drashon, we say that the Torah could have said simply this, but instead it says this and this. Why? So the answer is we have to try to find out, you know, what is the reason for it, okay? So why does it say keves echod when the word keves would have been sufficient? So, omaluhu, so Rab Nechunya said to his servants, he says, suvim b'rabonenhu. He's a Torah scholar. He's asking me a good scholarly question. Shavakuhu. So let him go. So then, of course, he came down, obviously, right? And now he's ready to answer questions. Question number one, you ask me, why does it say Echad? Omalei, so Echad, the reason of Echad means miyuchad shebe'edra, which means he has to be very special in the flock. In other words, the finest animal that you find, free of blemishes, good appearance, whatever it may be, and so on. But you want to get the finest animal to offer up as a sacrifice. And then, all right, then you ask me, you know, what did I do in order to deserve a long life? So he says, Amalei, he says his father, he says, Miyomai lo kibalti matonos. He says, first of all, as long as I lived, I never accepted gifts. Okay?
Right.
And he says, Midosai, nor did I ever stand, in other words, if somebody insulted me and so on, I never sought to get any revenge on any person. Okay? And I was also always very generous with my money. Right, okay, correct, he did say that before. But now, you know, he gave some new ideas, right? So he says, Loki Balti Mato knows, I did not accept gifts. He heard the Rabbi Elazar, in accordance with what Rabbi Elazar had to say. What did Rabbi Elazar say? He said, Ki Hava Mishadre Le Matonis from Megnesio, when they would send him gifts from the house of the Nasi. The Nasi, remember, the descendants of Hillel became the Nasiim in Eretz Yisrael. They became the heads of the academy, okay? And with that, the Nasi was like the, literally the prince, if you wish, for the entire Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael. So, obviously, you know, the Nasi wanted to show him favors, so what did he do? He sent them gifts. What the nature of the gifts were, could be gifts of food, it could be gifts of other types of gifts, you know. It doesn't say specifically what they were, but nevertheless, at any rate, when the Nasi would send gifts to him, he never would accept it. Okay? Right. Ki have a bizamni lay, and if I got an invitation to come and to dine with them, lo have azim, I never would go. Omaluhu, and he would say to them, you know, in other words, to the people who had invited him, lo nichaluhu the echya, what's the matter? You're not satisfied that I'm living? Because we have a pasuk in Mishlei, the book of Proverbs, which says, "Sone matonos yichya." If somebody hates to accept gifts, then he will have a long life. Of course, we were thinking about bribery, but I mean, we know that if you accept gifts, you feel beholden to that person. He felt that he did not want to, and according to what Shlomo HaMelech had to say, So he wanted to live without that. Rabbi Zera, Yav Mishadu Leyun Beinesiyo, Lehav Shokul. Alright, so parallel case. Rabbi Zera, when they would send him gifts from the house of the Nazi, Lehav Shokul, he would never accept it. But Kihav Mizamile, however, when the Nazi's household invited him to come, then in that case, Ozil, he would go. Why? He says, Omar is Yakuru de Misakari B. Because he says, they are honored the fact that I am there also, to show them honor. Okay? So, in other words, the honor is mutual, and that's the reason why. All right, then another statement that was made by Rabbi Nechunya, if you remember, was, "Velo amarati al midosai." So what is that? So he says, the Omar Rava, as Rava said, "Kol ha-ma'avir al midosav, ma'avir mena kol pshavav." If a person is willing to forego hurt, harm, and so on that's done unto him, right? He's willing to forgive people who have done that to him, and in that case, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam also will show him, mercy and forgive his sins as well. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Pasuk is, remember, no say ovom, right? Be over al pesha. Literally, it means that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is no say ovom. He's forbearing with sin, right? And he forgives transgressions. So, but he interprets it as follows. He says, "L'mi nosi olam, to whom will the Rebbeinu Shel Olam forgive the sins that he has?" It's l'mi shover pesha. It's to a person, who is willing to forgive others for the sins that were committed unto him. Another case. Shoal Rabbi is Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha. Rabbi asked Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha. He says, "Bameh rachta yomim." Tell me, what is the secret of your long life? So Amalei, so he said to him, Katzta v'chayai, what are you trying to do? Trying to make life difficult for me, he says. So Amalei, so he says, so Amalei Rabbi, so Rabbi said to him, no, I'm not trying to bother you or to make you feel miserable, he says, but rather Torah he, v'lilmod ani tzarich. This is for practical purposes. I want to know what is the Torah, what is the law, what is the teaching, so that I can learn it and live by it. In other words, I want to emulate all the good teachings that you are able to give to me. That's what I want to base my life upon. So he answered him. I have to catch back. Yeah, okay, so he said, all right. He says, Amalei, so he gave him the following answer. He says, first of all, as long as I've lived, I've never looked upon the face of a man who is wicked. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, as Rabbi Yochanan said, Osur li'odom li'istakel b'tselem debus odom rasha. Rabbi Yochanan said, it is prohibited for a person to look upon the face of somebody who is a wicked person. Shenemar, and he brings a proof for it from an incident that takes place in the book of 2 Kings, Malachim Beis. There it is written that the king of Israel, who was Jehoram, and Jehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, decided to make war together against the king of Syria, okay? And they called Elisha the prophet to come and, to tell him how the war would turn out. So what was Elisha's reply to them? So he said, Lule Pnei Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda Ani Nosei, right? If it were not for the fact that I want to show honor to the presence of Yehoshaphat, the king of Yehuda, so imabit elecho v'yimerecho, I will not look upon you, nor will I see you. In other words, you, King of Israel, because you are a sinner. So from this incident, he learns what? That you should not look upon a Russia. Well, not look upon a Russia. What do you mean? You can't see what a Russia looks like. Of course, I mean, we see on television all the time Saddam Hussein and all the other Russians, you know. But the point is to look upon them with admiration for them, with the idea that we're trying to understand them, what makes them tick, and eventually, you know, unfortunately, we'll fall into the trap of trying to emulate them in certain ways. So this is what he means.
That's an interesting concept in view of what our young people are seeing.
Yeah, right.
The heroes. You know,
of course.
To emulate.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Not only.
Yeah.
All kinds of heroes for the young people. No,
he was a dog. Yeah. Rabbi Elazar Amar, said, you know, if a person looks upon the wicked, Einov Kehos, his eyes become dim. In other words, his eyesight becomes poor. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Vayehi Kizokin Yitzchak, Vatechenu Eino Meraos. And it came to pass when Yitzchak became old that his eyes became dim, not being able to see. Mishum dis takel be Esav for Russia. The reason being because he looked upon Esav the wicked, right? Oh. In other words, he tolerated Esav, even though he was aware that he was not the highest moral character. Okay. So, they say, Vahogor Mole, right? And this, yes. This was a factor, it's a question, is this what caused it? The Omar, don't we have a different interpretation? That Rabbi Yitzchak, the Omar Rabbi Yitzchak said, Li oylam ati kilas hed yod kala b'yenecha. Let the klala, let the curse of an ordinary person never be light in your own eyes. In other words, don't feel, you know, don't have to pay any attention, but think seriously why it was, you know, given to you, because you can never tell when it will be fulfilled in you. And he gives an example. Shahre, here's the case. He says, Avimelech kileh lesoro niskayim izara. He says, Avimelech, who was the king of Plishtim, right? And what do we find? We find that Avraham said to Sarah, his wife, you know, tell him that, you know, you're my sister, right? And then what happened? So then Avimelech took her into, you know, his harem, right? And then, of course, the Ben Yishalem had to interfere and tell him, you know, don't you dare touch her because, you know, she is married and her husband is a novi. He said, okay. So at any rate, he gave her a gift as she left, right? And what was the gift? So we'll see in a second. Okay. Kiles Aravid is Kayim is Aravid, and it was fulfilled in her descendants. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Hinei hu loach kisusei naim, right? Behold, this gift, he says, that I'm giving you, it is like literally a garment for the eyes. Kisus normally means garment, okay?
What do you mean by the steam in the title?
This Kayim Mizar means that the curse was fulfilled in her descendant.
Her descendant.
Right, that's right. Who's the descendant of Sarah?
It was
Yitzchak. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. He says, Al Tikre Kesus, don't read the word Kesus. I mean, don't read it as Kesus, as a garment, but give a different interpretation. Ela Kesiyas Edayim. Okay? So, but the millions, you know, that it's like a covering of the eyes. So this was the klala, that this gift is to serve as a covering of the eyes. So, in other words, according to one opinion, the fact that Yitzchak became blind was because he tolerated the presence of Esav, right? And the other one is because of the curse that was pronounced upon Sarah, which was fulfilled in him, right? So they say, okay, you're arguing which is which? He says, no, homo or gorma, lay. Okay, both of them were factors in the reason. Both of them were reasons why he became blind. Rava has a similar idea, but from a different pasuk. It's written, "Se'es p'nei Rasha le'toiv." Okay, to tolerate the presence of a wicked person is not good. So, okay, it brings about the same idea, but from a different pasuk, right?
Cataracts, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. Don't remind me. V'shas p'tira, so. Now, when Rabbi was leaving him, so he said to him, Amalei, he says, Borcheni, please give me a blessing. So Amalei, he said to him, Yehi Ratzon, may it be God's will, Shetagia Lachatzi Yomai, that you should attain half of my life, half of my length of days, okay? Wadachucho lo Amalei. So, but he did not say, you know, that you should live as long as I live. Okay.
What kind of a
right? All right. Okay. And that's not the end of it yet. But he also said something else. He said to him, okay, Haboyim Acherecha, those who come after you, in other words, your own children, the Hemo Yiro, they will. Literally be herdsmen, the shepherds, you know, the flocks. Okay. So the question is, what's my brachas? Right? Right. What's my brachas? He's implying that when I'm very old, at the same time, I can't relinquish whatever I'm doing. And if that's if you will live as long as I do, then it means that your sons will never have an opportunity to become scholars in their own right, but instead they'll simply deteriorate because they can never hope to match you. So this way,
so that your sons
can then attain, you know. Okay, as a doctor. All right.
Now who's doing all this saying? This is
Robert. Yeah.
No, Robert said to him.
Right. Robert said that to him. Right.
And Rabbi Yeshua is the one that's blessing him.
This was still Rabbi Akiva and so on. This was Rabbi Akiva and.
This was Rabbi Zeira. Has he got a good reputation otherwise?
Of course he has a good reputation. Okay. So, at any rate, even though it's a little difficult to understand the bracha, but that would be the idea.
Oh, you just gaze upon animals.
Yeah.
No, not gaze upon
animals. No. A herd. Yeru is with an iron, not with an olive.
Shepherd.
This is the word roeh, which means to be a herdsman, to take care of the sheep, and so on. Like, for example, when we say Psalm 23, Hashem Roi, God is my shepherd. No, that is spelt, it's Reish Vav Ayin He, as compared to the word C, which is Reish Vav Aleph He. The two different roots, you understand? Okay. Now, all right. We'll go down to the new Mishnah. Okay. Then it says, Abuha bar Ihi, or Minyamin bar Ihi. Apparently they were brothers, okay? Abuha and Minyamin. Usually Abuha means the father of, but here it doesn't mean that, okay? Because that was his name, Abuha. Just as Abba is a name, so Abuha is also a name over here. So, at any rate, Chad Omar, one of them said, Teisi li, delo istakati b'kusi. One of them said, may God's blessing be granted unto me, because I have never looked at a kusi. A kusi, if you remember, literally the Samaritans, you know, the people who were not practicing an Orthodox lifestyle, okay? V'chad Omar, and the other one said, Taisi me, may God bless me, the law of the Shutvis Bahadekusi, that I never went into partnership with one. Because, obviously, the idea being that, you know, you might want to emulate their way of life and do business with them on their terms instead of doing it, you know, on the ethical terms that you're expected to do it. Okay. Sha'alu Talmidim is Rabbi Zeira. So now, again, the Talmidim ask Rabbi Zeira this time. Baneh Rakta Yomim. What zchus do you have that you have length of days? Omar lahem. So he said to them, first of all, Miyomai lo hikpadati besoch beisi. I had never showed anger within my house. In other words, whether with my wife or my children and so on and so forth, I always controlled my anger, and I never did anything, you know, to make them feel inferior or cause them any pain. Not only that, but also when I walked, I never walked in front of somebody who is greater than me, but instead I showed that person honor by letting him precede me when we walked. Okay. Below here, hati b'mavuas hamtunofes, nor did I ever think thoughts of Torah in alleys which are filled with, excrement and urine and so on and so forth. In those days, I don't have to tell you that they didn't have a very efficient garbage collection system or any sewers, that were worthwhile. So, people would simply dirty up places. So he says, whenever I came to an area which was filthy, I never thought thoughts over there. I refrained from doing it. Below halachti dalet amos, nor did I ever walk 6 feet below Torah without either thinking thoughts of Torah, or below tefillin, or not wearing tefillin. Below yashanti beveis hamedrash, nor did I ever sleep in the base medrash. Lo shenas keva, below shenas harai, neither a regular, in other words, a long sleep, or not even, something, an occasional sleep. Right.
So heroic acts don't bring along life.
Well, I don't know.
Quiet actions every day is what brings long life.
Right, okay. But if I wanted to make a joke, I could say it as follows. I never slept during the rabbi's sermon. Even though it seemed long, long, it gave me one
conversation.
But please, it doesn't apply. Okay. Just making a joke. Okay. But the point is that whatever he was in the base medrash, he made sure that he always devoted the time to learning and not to doing anything other than that. Okay? He says, "Velo sasti betakolas chaveri." Nor did I ever rejoice when my friends or when the other person, suffered a downfall. "Velo karosi lechaveri vechanicha soiv yamin lo vechan." Because the problem is that over here the reading is the same no matter what it may be. However, as Rashi explains, in one case I never called him either by his kinui, in other words the nickname, remember I spoke about that last week, where somebody's called Fatso or Shorty or whatever it may be and so on, right? I never called anybody that. But at the same time, never did I call somebody by his last name, by his family name, if the name didn't sound right or something like that. In other words, it was never, I don't have to tell you. Sometimes, huh?
Didn't have family names in those days.
Oh, but some people.
Some did.
Some did. Yeah.
Some did.
Way back in
the. Yeah, for the most part. I mean, it's true. I mean, they simply gave the name of the father. This is sure. Right.
But was Ben Yehuda, that would be his family name.
No. His family. He's talking about
it became a more time. Right. But it's a little hard, under those circumstances to understand, but nevertheless, apparently there were names that were given. And so he wants to imply that I never called anybody a name which I felt was not a fitting name. So, all right. And of course it shows, you know, that we have to have respect for others and always feel right, you know, that we have to do what is right.
Go back to that first.
Yes.
That first. The explanation they give here is a little different than what the...
Yeah.
Is Rashi gives a different explanation for that.
Okay, number 10. Which curse are we talking about?
One way he's talking about...
holding a grudge.
You mean with the behemoths?
Yeah, with the behemoths.
All right, let's take a look at Rashi.
What is with the one with the behemoths?
Right. Rashi says it's bitbia, which means this is a question. He said, those after you, they should be shepherds of sheep, right? Isn't it enough for you, I mean, that you'll live many long, you know, a long life just like I do? Shein kein, because if that's the case, says Rashi, lo yitlu bonecha bigdulotcha. Your children will never be able to acquire part of your greatness. Ve'ata nasi, you are a nasi. They will never, because you live a long life, so they will never be able to become a Nassim in their own right.
What kind of blessing is that?
So that's why it says they had to learn to do something instead. They have to learn to be
real.
Right.
If you live a long time, and you stay, you know, with all your authority, you know, whatever, for a long time,